Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, the Packers make a couple of early week transactions. Jared Aberderis, wide receiver, and safety Chris Banjo both go on injured reserve, unfortunately, replaced by two players signed from the practice squad, wide receiver Geronimo Allison and safety Jermaine Whitehead. Allison, certainly a player on the offensive side of the ball, generated a lot of attention in training camp and in the preseason. What do you make of these roster moves here?
Well, Allison certainly is an interesting one. When you look at him, 6'3", 202 pounds. I thought he had an extremely impressive rookie camp and going into that training camp. And in any other year, I think would have really made a strong bid to make the roster. Unfortunately for him, the Packers, with seven guys drafted at that position, were incredibly deep, and there wasn't that spot to be had. But obviously the Packers made a decision here that Jared Aberderis' injury was going to keep him out here for a number of weeks. They needed to have somebody healthy and ready, and Allison certainly brings another dimension to that offense. We talked about it before. One of the strengths, I think, of that receiving core is there really are no two players who are alike, and certainly with Allison, his size and makeup, there's nobody that you can really duplicate with him.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see just how quickly he gets worked into the receiver rotation with the way the Packers right now are spreading the ball out, spreading out on offense, shotgun, four and five wide receiver, that kind of thing. We'll see how quickly he's worked into the rotation. The other side of it, tough to see a veteran like Chris Banjo, a veteran special teams leader, really one of the top special teams players on this team for the last couple of years, to see his season unfortunately come to an end. A young guy in Whitehead who probably his first avenue to playing time will be on special teams.
Yeah, Jermaine Whitehead, kind of interesting. He's not an undrafted rookie. He did come into the league as a college free agent, but actually spent time last year with Baltimore and San Francisco, was actually, I believe, up on the Ravens active roster at the end of last season. He gets cut during the offseason. A week later, the Packers pick him up in May, and suddenly now he finds himself back on an active roster. An interesting player in that he's kind of that cross-hybrid type of defensive back the Packers have been training the last few years. He is listed as a safety, but plays slot cornerback much in the same form as Micah Hyde. So gives them another body there as far as that depth and rotation. But as you mentioned, the big thing that Chris Banjo gave you, a team-high 21 coverage tackles last year on special teams, is that special teams presence. And that's something that Whitehead will be looked to kind of help out with a little bit, because without Banjo, they're going to need more players, especially at defensive back, to help out of that capacity with all the injuries they've had at cornerback.
Yeah, for sure. And we, at the time we're taping this episode, we're just a couple of hours away from hearing from Mike McCarthy on what hopefully will be the latest injury updates in the secondary and whatnot. We know there are some reports out there, so we'll see what the head coach has to say. But certainly the Packers all season long, from a roster standpoint, this has been about being as deep at wide receiver and as deep in the secondary as possible, and these latest moves reflect that.
Yeah, definitely. And this is kind of, like as you mentioned with Banjo, this is tough in nature, because I don't think with Aberderis or Banjo, these were necessarily injuries that were going to keep them out till the end of December. But certainly when you look at how many mounting issues there have been with the Randall and Rollins and Cook, you know, James Starks, who probably will be out again this week, but still is on the active roster.
Right.
Their decisions have been pretty cut and dry the last couple weeks in terms of what their game day 46 are. And these are issues that sometimes creep up, and you have to make the adjustments that you need to make. And certainly, when you look at the depth at cornerback, that was a big position for them going into the season. And really, it's been stressed to the max, the fact that you've seen Josh Hawkins play, the fact that you're seeing Ladarius Gunter become an every-down player. Those are things that on paper weren't there at the beginning of the season, but with everything that's happened, the Packers have had to adjust, and this is the direction that they have to head.
Yeah, for sure. And we're seeing plenty of contributions for the Packers on the defensive side of the ball, in particular from young players. And after the break, we'll get to a couple of specifics in that regard. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, a couple of rookies on the defensive side of the ball for the Packers. When you turn on the film from that Chicago game, there was a lot to like there. You featured one in your Player on the Rise feature for the website in Blake Martinez. I spotlighted another in the What You Might Have Missed feature in Kenny Clark. But let's start with Martinez. When you went back and kind of watched the video of the defensive performance against Chicago, what stood out to you?
Well, certainly when you look at Martinez's game, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season, it hasn't unfolded like, you know, a lot of us were predicting it would. I think myself included thought that he was going to be the three-down linebacker. Well, as it turns out, they still are using Joe Thomas in that role and pretty successfully for that matter. But all three of those guys have really had roles when you look at Jake Ryan, Thomas, and Martinez.
Yep.
Now, Martinez has kind of the last few weeks been in and out of the lineup with that busted nose that keeps kind of coming, you know, keeps re-breaking as far as the skin is concerned.
Yeah.
So they've been a little bit more cautious with him, but they needed him to play a lot in this game with Ryan going down. And I thought specifically, you know, he had some nice tackles throughout the course of the game, a couple nice run fits, but when the team needed to really just close this victory out, he gave them a really strong performance. On one particular play, bats a ball from Matt Ryan. He turned his head. It was right there, and it ends up getting batted up, goes for pass deflection. He's like, I was that close to be able to get that one. Well, as it turns out, three plays later, basically a play in the very similar fashion unfolds, and this time it was Morgan Burnett that deflected it into the hands of Martinez, gets his first career pick. He had, I believe, five of them at Stanford, but being able to get his first one in the NFL I know was pretty meaningful, and the fact that that young man's come in and played that role on this defense, that's not easy to do as a rookie, and I thought that said a lot about him. Not only the interception and the pass defenses, but also leading the team with five tackles, and certainly the Packers needed it in that game.
Yeah, you saw a couple of plays where he really pursued, you know, from that inside linebacker spot out to the sideline to stretch out a running play and get involved in the tackle there. And that was the type of play that jumped out at me with Kenny Clark.
Yeah.
A running play with, I believe it was with Jordan Howard, on kind of an outside zone play, you might say, and nobody really blocked Clark coming from the interior of the defensive line, and boy, he showed he's not just a run plugger. He's got some athletic ability, some speed. He got out there, and it was a 3-yard gain on a second and one. The Bears still got the first down, but that was looking like a 6-7-8-yard gain, and Kenny Clark chased him down there before anybody else could get to him. An impressive play, and then also we saw Kenny Clark was sort of, you know, head-to-head a few times with Cody Whitehair, a second-round pick rookie for the Bears playing center. Clark, obviously, a first-round pick for the Packers. Kind of an interesting matchup. And Clark won that battle a couple times pretty impressively.
He did. And that was, for me, Mike, the thing that stood out the most at me and Clark in this game is that he does have a lot of strength for a guy that just turned 21 years old. Very powerful at the point of attack, was able to penetrate into the backfield on a number of occasions during that game. But also, as you alluded to, too, is really fast. I think for a man of his size, you really saw his athleticism.
Yeah, he can move.
And with no disrespect to B.J. Raji or, you know, Ryan Pickett, any of these guys have had in the last few years, but I think this is what the Packers were thinking of achieving when they went with him in the first round, much like Mike Daniels, guys that are just probably a little bit faster, you know, maybe just a little bit more agile at that point in their careers, and that's really shined through. So as much as the outside linebackers setting the edge, the inside linebackers containing, it's been that defensive front that I thought has kind of set the tone for both this run defense and also the fact that even if a running back gets to the outside, it's not necessarily that a defensive back's going to have to come and get him. It could potentially be Kenny Clark.
Yeah, for sure. I think what we've seen in the Packers' defensive front, if you look at this evolution over the last couple of years, it's been an increase in overall speed. And that's certainly paying dividends against the run this year. And I think as the season goes along, we're going to see even more from guys like Kenny Clark. When you look at the Chicago game, the Bears only had, 45
right.
offensive plays? And with the way the Packers are rotating players, it's not like Kenny Clark even played a whole heck of a lot of snaps against Chicago. But the ones he was in there, he made him count. He made an impact.
Same thing could be said for Dean Lowry. Dean Lowry did not play a lot of snaps in that game, but I thought what he gave them late in that contest in terms of you know, being able to get a couple nice bull rushes from the three technique, one of those I think even contributed, I want to say, to one of the interceptions, or at least was a direct tie-in to a potential play there as well. So both of those rookies, I think, have really stepped up and are one of the reasons why they were able to get Mike Pinnell back and really still be able to have a really solid nucleus inside despite all those questions that they had going into the season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Packers have the Atlanta Falcons on deck this week, a trip down to Atlanta. We've got some Packers-Falcons history to discuss after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, Packers-Falcons, the recent history of this series, not one that jumps out at anybody where you say there's this big rivalry or it's not one that people talk about in terms of the history. But before we sat down here to tape the show, I took a look at the Matt Ryan versus Aaron Rodgers history of these two teams, and boy, there have been a lot of close, down-to-the-wire games with comebacks, all kinds of things. Most recently, of course, that we talked about on yesterday's show, the 2014 Monday night game, the Packers are up 31-7 at halftime here at Lambeau Field and then have to hang on for a 43-37 shootout victory as Julio Jones goes off for 259 receiving yards. Yeah. Seems to be just the type of game that these two teams like to play.
Yeah, this will be the fifth matchup now for Matt Ryan and the Green Bay Packers. 2-3 in those matchups, 92.7 passer rating. So nothing that's been bad. But as you said, it's been interesting in that even if you go back to the Super Bowl season, it just seems like these two teams have kind of always found themselves one way or another. And certainly for many years, they were built very similarly when they were kind of talking about a pass-heavy sort of offense. You have your stud receivers that you kind of feed, and certainly a defense that I think in both situations was kind of in transition. Now, Green Bay, I thought, has really developed a really solid championship caliber unit. I'm still not entirely sure what the Falcons have in terms of their defense and what their identity is now, but offensively, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, that's been the matchup here for a couple years, and certainly that's one of the battles when you're going to be looking at this game, even though they obviously aren't playing each other, that are always one of the interesting ones to follow.
Yeah, for sure. And to kind of go back to the beginning of the history, it actually starts in 2008, which was Rodgers' first season as the starter and Matt Ryan's rookie year, right, for the Falcons. Ryan comes into Lambeau Field and knocks off the Packers 27-24, gets a three-point victory, a big win for him early in his career. Then you fast forward to 2010, the regular season, the Packers go down to Atlanta, lose on a last-second field goal 20-17 after Aaron Rodgers made an incredible fourth-down touchdown throw to Jordy Nelson to keep the Packers in it and keep the game tied late. Then the Packers go back to Atlanta in the playoffs in 2010, and Rodgers has that otherworldly game. Packers roll up 48 points and emerge with a victory. 2011, Falcons looking for their revenge, so to speak. They jump ahead 14-0 on Green Bay on a Sunday night game. Packers come back and beat them 25-14, 25 straight points over the final three quarters there. Then 2013, the game that Aaron Rodgers did not play, the Falcons again, they're leading 21-10 at halftime. Matt Flynn brings the Packers back for a 22-21 one-point victory. And then, as we mentioned, the 2014 Monday night game, it just seems certainly the recent history is about the team that's down coming back, making a rally, and making the game certainly more interesting than it looks at first, and it'll just be interesting to see if that's how the 2016 matchup plays out.
Yeah, the 2013 game is still going to be one, even though obviously 2010, both of those matchups were so huge in terms of the playoff picture and then later on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But 2013 stands out to me because I thought that was kind of the defining moment for Eddie Lacy too. Certainly it was Matt Flynn that managed him and got him back there, but I thought that was kind of the game that cemented Eddie Lacy as an offensive rookie of the year, really candidate and contributor.
Yeah.
And certainly when you go back, I mean, that was a time in which the Packers desperately needed it. they didn't know which direction their season was going. They had an idea that Aaron Rodgers could be back at some point, but still were just trying to bide time to get him there. And they came through with a big win there. And in even 2014, I mean, I remember getting that lead at halftime, and everybody, not that anyone was resting on their laurels a little bit, but it was almost incredible what the flip, the switch that the Falcons flipped.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, Julio Jones just suddenly became this unstoppable force, and You know, the Packers sputtered a little bit on offense. It's not like the Packers were turning the ball over or anything. I don't remember it being like that. But suddenly, anytime Matt Ryan got his hands on the football, you know, Julio Jones was catching 20 and 30-yard passes. And before you know it, the Packers need to – I believe it was James Starks had a big run right at the end.
Yeah.
When the Falcons got within six, the Packers needed to run out the clock and not give them another crack on offense. And James Starks gets a big run, and one of those that you end up breathing a sigh of relief, because the way Matt Ryan was throwing the ball in that second half, if he'd gotten another crack at it, he just might have pulled it out.
Yeah, definitely. And when you think about it, too, now Calvin Johnson retired, really the two longest tenured duos in the NFL – are come down to Julio Jones and Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson. And in terms of, you know, guys that really have had that connection for that number of years now. Now, Jones, still only 27 years old, has a lot of years ahead of him.
Yeah.
But I think these last two seasons in particular, we've really seen him take it to another level. And now that Johnson isn't there anymore, trying to stay claim to that top sort of receiver in the NFL position. And Matt Ryan, as we talked about in yesterday's show, has really been targeting him a lot. I mean, that's been his guy, as it always has been. But it seems like that's where this offense runs through for the Falcons, where Green Bay, it seems a little bit more diversified right now in how they're going about handling this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one way or another chapter of this Packers-Falcons history will be written on Sunday in Atlanta. Before we go to a break, we'll do a little sponsor business here, Wes. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, I wanted to get your thoughts on something we saw in the Sunday night game between Seattle and Arizona. We talked about in our last show the defensive battle and everything that that went on there. But on the field goal attempts by Arizona, we saw Bobby Wagner, the middle linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks, leap over the long snapper and block a field goal. Now, we saw Cam Chancellor do that for the Seahawks a few years ago. I think it might even have been in a playoff game against Carolina. And just interested in your thoughts on you know, A, how difficult is that? Because that can't be an easy thing to do. But then B, is this something that other teams are going to start trying, or is this just a Seattle specialty?
Well, it is a big risk.
Yeah.
And you also got to keep in mind what the situation is, because if that guy comes down and makes contact with anybody, it's a penalty, if I remember correctly, right? I mean,
yeah.
In terms of if he ends up landing on the long snapper or hitting
If he lands on the long snapper, it's going to be a penalty. I think if it's it was sort of described as if it's like incidental contact or not anything that's a forcible type of contact, they'll probably let it go. But he really has to clear the guy.
Absolutely, and it's one of those things that, you know, with how the NFL has kind of protected the long snapper over the years, you can watch it a lot of times in these games. These guys aren't pulling their head back up. They're snapping the ball and they're staying low. And guys can try to navigate around them fine, but they're not coming back up and, you know, risking blocking it or anything of that matter. So for Wagner, and I thought this was really impressive by Chancellor being a, you know, defensive back, but for Wagner as an inside linebacker to be able to do that, I don't know what his vertical was at the combine, however many years ago, but was incredibly impressive. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think Seattle's dialed up, obviously, some really attractive and surprising special teams plays over the past few years. The Packers, unfortunately, were a part of that back in 2014. But it was a different wrinkle to it. I am curious if you guys, you know, take a, you know, some of these guys that are really separating themselves in terms of athleticism and want to throw them in the middle of the field there and see what they can do. you know, maybe it's worth a shot. But again, the situation has to be right, because if it's underneath a third and or a fourth and four or something like that, well, then suddenly you can extend their drive for them too if you can.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. The timing has to be so perfect.
Absolutely.
And it really does need to be a fourth and long type of situation with the field goal. And the first one where Wagner did get the block on Sunday night, it was fourth and 11. So if he mistimes it and jumps over the center before the snap is even made, okay, so it's offsides, it's 5 yards, it's still fourth and six. They're still probably going to kick the field goal. So this is not something you can just do at any time. And even in the overtime one at the end, the Cardinals were kicking on third down, but it was third and goal from the 6 yard line after a delay of game penalty, actually. So again, if he mistimes it on that one, it's half the distance to the goal and the ball's on the 3 yard line instead of on the six. They're probably still going to kick it. You're not talking about giving them a fresh set of downs. So those circumstances play into the decision to try it.
Yeah, and an overall awareness too, because you got to make sure that none of your teammates are there as well, because if you make contact with them, then they can get you for the launching rules that everybody's been kind of really fixating on now these last few years.
That leverage penalty.
Leverage, yeah. And that's one thing that referees, I mean, officials, I think we saw it in one of the games here the last few weeks with Green Bay, didn't we, that someone got flagged for that? I'm trying to remember what it was.
I can't remember exactly.
Or at least one of the games I was watching, someone got flagged for that. So that's something you have to stay very cognizant of. The guy's also got to be somewhat fearless, because if you're going up, not only are you risking coming down hard, the best case scenario is you basically taking a kick right to the jugular.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, there's, I think about Ty Montgomery and the couple punt blocks he had this last month. You got to be somewhat fearless to go in there and be okay with that contact, because it could be coming.
Yeah, and you wonder how much that, even if it's not successful as a block, how much that potentially distracts the kicker. I mean, Catanzaro in overtime ends up donking it off the upright, and the Cardinals end up not winning the game. And you wonder just how much he was distracted by the fact that Wagner was plowing through there. But all right, well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.